This is Fred Biletnikoff, and you're listening to the NFL Alumni Cliff Branch Tribute.
You'd be proud of this game, and you can do a great deal for football today.
The whole tradition of the National Football League, there's just certain things that go together, the family, football, and we have it all today.
Time never really stops for the great ones. It reaches out and wraps them in a cloak of immortality.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Charlie Boots. Welcome back to the NFL Alumni Lounge. It's episode 21, and that means we're celebrating only one, the one and only Clifford Branch, one of the greatest wide receivers the game of football has ever seen. And he brought one of the biggest smiles and best attitudes to the game of football that we'll ever know. Cliff was a great friend of mine, and I'm sure a great friend of yours. I'll always appreciate him. I'll always love him. And today, we'll toast him. We're going to be joined by two of Cliff's Hall of Fame teammates, Mike Haynes and Fred Biletnikoff. And we have an interview, full interview, with Cliff Branch that's going to air right here in the NFL Alumni Lounge. You've never heard it yet. We're honored to be bringing it to you. But hold on, before we go on air, Cliff, we're going to have to pull up to the show in something. How do you want to do it?
We take a G5 Learjet.
Well, I guess the cat's out of the bag, folks. The man is in the house. Cliff, how are you?
Boots, is always good to see you, man. We're shaking with you.
Just better now that I'm seeing you. Now, Cliff, you've always been the most positive. You always got a smile on your face. Did you always have the self-belief that we saw on the field with you since you were a kid?
Always. Ever since I was a little kid, man, when I found out that I was the fastest kid in the neighborhood, fastest kid in elementary school, and all the other grade levels, I was destined for glory.
Oh, so young CB was just embarrassing kids in the neighborhood.
Oh, well, nobody wanted to raise me because it was automatic.
I told you, folks, no lack of confidence here. And, Cliff, you grew up in Texas, right?
Yes, I'm from the big state of Texas.
What about Texas just produces fantastic football players?
Well, I mean, the state is large. You got levels of football, high school football, all the way up to the 6A division. So you got Division One, Division Two, Division Three, Division Four, Five, and Six class. So division means from one all the way up to six is a student body count. When you got a body count all the way in the 6A, you're talking about 10,000 kids. You know what I mean? You're talking about almost like a university and a high school.
Wow. So in high school, you're getting NCAA pro level energy in the stadium.
No question about it. I mean, because you think all my high school games played in a stadium called Jefferson Stadium. So we had Wednesday night football, Thursday night football, Friday night light football, Texas Southern, and the University of Houston would play there on Saturdays, and then the Houston Oilers would play there on Sundays. That kind of stadium got a lot of activity, and it was a big time in high school to play in a stadium, you know, that holds 25 to 40,000 people.
Did you just walk on freshman year, varsity starting receiver? How'd that work?
Well, during that time and area in the 60s, junior high school went from 7th, 8th, and 9th. So we didn't have freshman ball. High school was 10, 11, and 12. And then the fall of 67, after I graduated, integration came about. Then they started having 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th in high school.
And these were huge squads, guys. How many guys do you think you had to go against to get a spot on that team?
Oh, I don't know. You had to be 3 deep, 4 deep in a position. Right. But I came in as a 10th grader right out of junior high school and started pretty much right off the bat. I was a city champion sprinter in junior high school. So when I came in high school, I was always had excellent speed, city championship junior high school speed. So I came in as a 10th grader with very good speed.
So young Clifford Branch, 10th grade, where's his head? Where's his heart? Is it in football, track, the girls?
I was a three-sport star. I played baseball. Everybody thought I was going to be a baseball player, but I didn't play baseball in high school because I ran track and field.
But what position did you play in baseball?
Believe it or not, I was a catcher.
Really?
Yes, because nobody wanted to play catch, and I was a catcher. A catcher was, to me, like the quarterback of a football team. He helps call the signals for the pitchers, that the pitcher's going to be throwing, and then that's why I never had any knee problems. Being down in that catcher position made my knees very strong. And then the eye-hand coordinator also helped my receiving skills as I developed as a wide receiver. So all that, being a catcher, really was a plus for me in my development as a pass receiver in the National Football League and in college and in high school.
He was developing the hands behind the plate. So did you ever have a problem with focusing when it would switch from baseball to football?
Well, I never had a problem with focusing. Whatever I participated in, I was the best at it, you know what I mean? Whether it was football, a world-class track guy coming out of high school into college and using that speed to develop and become an all-pro wide receiver. So they all work together.
So where did you get that focus from?
Well, I had a coach in high school named Oliver Brown, who developed me in junior high school, who really was a technician and really knew I had great speed in junior high school, saw me, and really developed me. And he was a guardian angel for me. He looked up after me from junior high to high school. And even when I was at the University of Colorado, when I come back to big track meets in Texas and stuff like that, he would be at the events coaching high school track, and we had the collegiate going on the same time. So he was always there for me, seemed like.
And that just goes to show the power of a coach. Like, you guys, just going from a grade to a grade, it's a step, but it's a whole life step. It's not just the number of your grade changing.
That's a big thing, and the young kids leaving from college, going to the pros now, because, you know, there's so much money involved with being a pro now, and careers are shorter, and guys tend to lose focus.
Right, that's intense. Imagine you're coming out of college, coming out of Colorado, and they say, Cliff, you're going to be making $30 million. How do you handle that?
Well, you have to handle it. When I came out of college, you know what I mean, my contract was $18,500, $21,500, and $24,500 with a $13,000 signing bonus, and I thought that was a lot of money. And the money these guys are making today, definitely deserving. The NFL is a multi-billion dollar industry, so the players are millionaires now, and it's all deserving. So I'm happy for the young guys, but can't forget where you come from. To get to in that position, you have to have great concentration, great work ethic to sustain success.
That feeds in pretty nicely with just win, baby. Now, you were around some great leaders. Did you and Al Davis just hit it off right away, two winner mentalities?
Well, Al Davis was like a god to us. He was like a god to all the coaches. He was well-respected. He was well-feared, and his word was very godish. He made you believe in what he was trying to accomplish. The camaraderie and the togetherness, And everybody being on the same page and sacrificing for one thing, to win football games. And there was no selfishness during that era that I was playing with the Raiders.
So what kind of music were you guys listening to before the game to get in the zone?
We had music cassette players in the locker room that everybody listened to. Everybody listened to one thing, man. So everybody was zoned into one type of music that whatever we were playing. And it was always the one song. It was Ain't No Stopping Us Now.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Ain't no stopping us now.
We on the move.
We got the groove.
There we do.
Cliff Branch and Charlie the Bulls.
We on the move.
We're on the move, 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 move.
Ain't no stopping us now.
It's Branch and Boots. Made a love to you, 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 and you.
And it's no stopping us now.
It's the Raider life. With the fastest man alive, yeah.
What we got, CB?
We got the groove.
Groove, groove, groove,
and it's no stopping us now. You remember that cut, right?
Of course.
Oh, man, that was in every Sunday. That's what we played. Ain't no stopping us now.
And there was no stopping you.
No stopping us three times, baby.
No stopping. Oh, folks, look at that. Look at who is pulling up to the party right now. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Hall of Fame, Freddie B, Mr. Fred Biletnikoff. Fred, how are you?
Boots, I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm talking to you. And like Cliff would always say, it's good to hear your voice. You and Cliff have a historic relationship, but a special personal relationship. You're a man that Cliff would call father. What did CB mean to you?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. You know, Cliff and I had a special relationship, but not only on the field, but off the field. And, you know, we were just really, really close friends. And, you know, it meant a lot to both of us to be able to play together for the period of time that we're able to be on the field together. But, you know, just to carry that friendship off the field, too. And, you know, he's missed very dearly. Believe me, there are too many days to go by that I don't think about Cliff. But we just had a special friendship. You know, we hit it off when he was just a young kid, you know, when he first came to the Raiders. And then it just grew from there.
What was it like when he got added to that roster? What a special team that was. What was it like when that speed was added to that team?
Well, it changed the whole dynamic of the offense. The one thing, like with Cliff, you know, not too many people forget, and I always, even now, well, not now anymore. I hope it's in Las Vegas, where down in the corner of the end zone, it says number 21, speed kills. And that's exactly what Cliff added to the team, that speed, and making defenses play entirely different than they wanted to. And when he came out of the huddle and lined up, you know, people feared him. And, you know, when you're a receiver and you play that position, you know, when you can go and make a defense adjust to you, then you know you're really the cut above guy.
We hear a story about when he came in as a rookie and you really teaching him. Obviously, you were the master of the hands. What did you teach Cliff early on about catching the football?
Well, you know what? When we were up at training camp at that time, and I always would stay out after practice, and you know, after practice was over, go and you know, get something to drink, sit around for a few minutes, and go back out and do some work out there. And so Cliff was going in the locker room one day, and I go, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going." I said, "The hell you are." I said, "Go take off your pads. I'll wait for you out here." I said, "You're not done. We got some more work." I said, "I'm tired of seeing balls bouncing off your chest." And he kind of looked at me. And so that's kind of how our relationship really started. Because, you know what? I've seen so many guys come in throughout the league with so much speed. But, you know, to have somebody with that major speed, I mean, it's just unbelievable. To go out there and have the addition of learning how to run routes, how to catch the football, and really be a complete receiver. And that's what he became. You know, that's, you know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I slobbered over the guy because I love the way the receiver he became from when I first saw him come in. And then to all the way to the end of his career, he's just amazing. And the work he put in and to go and be labeled basically like a track guy. And then you have that track and receiver ability. He's just awesome. Just awesome.
That team had some of the best smiles in the world with you, Kenny Stabler, Cliff Branch. Have you ever seen a guy who's able to always be happy? I never seen Cliff anything other than extremely happy and beaming.
You know, I'll tell you what, that was Cliff. He was that way from the first day I met him all the way through his entire life, you know. And it's, you know, I always, before Kenny passed, we always used to kid Kenny about, you know, when we'd be in a ball game and Kenny had to throw a deep ball to Cliff, Kenny would draw back and Cliff would might be only about 10 yards down the field and the ball was already in the air. You know, because Kenny goes, if I wait for this guy, yeah, I'm not going to get it out there for him. And that's the impact that Kenny had with Cliff. He says, I got to get the ball out. And you can look at it and see Cliff, he'd be like right at 10 yards and the ball is already in the air. And all of a sudden, you see that guy burst for the ball and explode to the ball. It's amazing. Amazing.
Something that I think the whole world could use some advice on right now. That Raiders family, it's always been kind of a level setter for pro sports, this environment where everybody succeeded, but it was welcoming to everyone, people from all walks of life, all different paths. What is it about that Raiders organization and the family that Al Davis created that made it such a, you know, loving, accepting, wild bunch?
Well, you know what? Al wanted to surround himself and the organization with guys that wanted to go out there and win, you know, that had that passion to win football games and hated to lose. So throughout my years playing, and then even when I was coaching, we always had guys throughout the team that hated to lose. And that was the whole thing. That's, you know, winning, losing brings people together. But, you know, he got the good combination of guys that when he brought somebody in or he drafted somebody, he already had in his mind what that guy's role on a team was going to be. And that's the reason that everybody had their role. We all got along together very, very well. And we just grew together. You know, we suffered highs and lows together, and everybody seemed to come from backgrounds that they were underdogs. And they had to battle their way to even get to the NFL, much less be successful. So that's what our team was about.
If there's one trait, you know, I know you've coached receivers. Every year you give the best receiver in college football the Fred Biletnikoff Trophy. Now, if you had to take one tribute, one attribute, one factor out of Cliff Branch that you could put into every receiver, what would it be?
Well, when you have a player that you're playing with, I'll tell you what, that you know can go out there and see that defense be totally scared of him, scared to death. That's what I would tell guys. If you want to be the cut above like Cliff was, you got to get out there and make people fear you.
Good luck on finding receivers like Cliff Branch and Fred Biletnikoff ever again in the league. Jeez, Freddie, thank you so much.
Okay, Boots. Hey, listen, he's never forgotten. Believe me. Never.
These Raiders, some of the best partiers in NFL history.
We got the Boots.
Fred Biletnikoff, Cliff Branch.
And it's no stopping us now.
Kenny the Snake Stabler. And as Cliff comes gliding back into the alumni lounge, Cliff, what did Kenny Stabler mean to you, and how was it? How was that chemistry on the field?
Well, you know, Kenny played in the era that we didn't have no coordinator. The game plan was given to Kenny on a Thursday. We went out and executed it, and to prepare what we would see on Sunday. First thing Kenny would say in the huddle, man, he said, "Let me know what you can do out there, Cliff. Let me know what you can do out there." You know, Fred Belendica, Casper, and then Upshaw himself. And then we would relay it to Kenny. I'm looking to get deep first or second play of the game. I come off the line of scrimmage. If the man's going to play me 5 yards off and he ain't giving me no cushion, I say, shit, I can run by him. And I come back to the huddle. I say, Kenny, he's sitting on me. He say, shit, let's go up right now. And then we go 6 or 7 yards for a touchdown. He come to the sideline and tell me, good call, Cliff. We did that so many times, man. And then my first year, 74, you know, leading the league and touchdowns and reception and stuff with a high average and stuff like that. So, I mean, results, then I went on for 4 straight years because of the way Kenny liked to run his offense and play chess and then let his players let me know what you can do out there. I'm proud to be Kenny Stabler's teammate, and man, I just can't imagine if Kenny could have played in L.A., man, that would have been so much fun off the field, man. Hollywood, Sunset, oh, man, Jesus Christ, that would have been fun to have Kenny play in L.A. He didn't get a chance to play. That would have been some more real estate there. We'd have had fun in, you know what I mean, in that city, man.
Jeez, imagine you two in Vegas. I think they might be running odds at the casinos if you're going to get to the game.
Well, you know, Kenny said you don't need that much sleep to go play a 3-hour football game.
That's a great theory, man.
Right, how much sleep do you need to go play a 3-hour football game? And he going to say, He's going to be telling everybody, pace yourself, baby. This is not a full quarter. This is a marathon, so pace yourself, okay?
And for a group of guys that knew how to have fun, you also knew how to make it look easy on Sundays. Where did that start?
Well, I mean, it started with Willie Brown. You know, it started with Hall of Fame Willie Brown, and then Mike Haynes came over, and Lester was there. So I had gone against the best in practice 6 days out of a seven-day week. And then on Sunday, it was easy for me because I had gone against Willie Brown and Mike Haynes and Lester Hayes 6 days out of 7 days. So when you can go against those guys 6 days, and then on Sunday, you're getting ready for a game, I had gone against the best. So it was naturally very easy on Sunday for me.
Who could that be? Oh, folks, here he is checking in. The man Cliff was just talking about. Hall of Fame. Handsome. Mike Haynes.
Mike Haynes here. Want to say a few words about my good friend, teammate, Cliff Branch. I came in the National Football League in 1976. And that year, I was very fortunate to have a chance to prepare for some of the greatest receivers of all time. Many of those guys are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. John Stallworth, Len Swan, many great receivers. One of them is Cliff Branch. I don't know what year it was. I would say my rookie year was 76, so I'd say around 1979 or so. I got injured. And I won't mention his name because of the way this story goes, but because I was injured, the guy behind me, he stepped up and moved into my starting spot. And we always used to kid, and he used to always say, Mike, if you ever get hurt, I'm going to get that spot. It's going to be mine, you know. And so he finally had his day. Unfortunately, the game that the Patriots played that weekend involved a super fast receiver named Cliff Branch. And so on like a third down and, six or seven, Cliff ran a little up route. I think he ran like 80-something yards for a touchdown. And so now I'm laying in hospital watching the game on TV, and I'm laughing my tail off because here's a guy who's going to take my spot, and he's having such a hard time with Cliff Branch. In college, this player was a quarterback, and he had been converted to corner, and he's really going to be a good corner, but he's still developing. Well, because of the penalty, that they called the play back, and they ran the exact same play. The Raiders ran the exact same play a second time. And guess what? Cliff caught it again, and he was on his way. but this time, I think because he had run so far on the previous play, he was a little bit tight, and he got caught. But I laugh about that because people just have no idea how fast he was, especially in those early days. Just a lot of fun to watch, and I enjoyed it a lot more when we were on the same team. You know, now having a chance to go up against Cliff Branch every single day, I was really lucky because he played at a different speed than he practiced, and he also would tell me on each one of the plays what he was going to do. He'd come out of the huddle, he'd say, Haynes, got a post. Haynes, got an in. Haynes, got an out. So I didn't really feel like it was appropriate for me to play my best when I knew what he was gonna do. And he was just wanting to work on his timing and work on the route and get it down. And I had an appreciation for that. As you might guess, I loved him. I loved working with him. I loved talking to him. He was one of the most gifted receivers of all time. Big heart, loved people, loved the Raider fans. And he is definitely gonna be missed. He's in my book. He is one of the best players to ever play. Should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's in my Hall of Fame, though. Love you, Cliff.
Thank you, Mike. We love you. Cliff, what do you think about the Hall of Fame?
I tell you what, it'd be a wonderful celebration. To top off a fabulous, healthy career, getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame would be the climactic of my career.
And he will be there, folks. Now, Cliff, when you went to school out in Colorado, did you ever get a chance to check out the Red Rocks, the concert venue?
I've gone out there and sit in the venue when it was empty, so many times. Take a date up there and just walk around when it's empty. So It's a sight to see, no question about it.
Well, I'll tell you what, if we hear they're doing a Temptations reunion, you might need to watch out, because I think the CB boys might be on the scene.
You know it, man. Hey, she's my everything.
Charlie the Boots, Cliffy the Branch, the CB boys, we're on the Raider Life Podcast.
You surely must know Magic Girl, 'cause you changed my life.
That's right, baby.
Yeah, I like that. Now, something that's not dull and ordinary are those Oakland Raiders silver and black uniforms, the classics. What did you think the first time you laid eyes on those uniforms?
I was meant to be in this uniform. And I thank Al Davis for being the genius that he is and was. He know talent, man. And he had a staff of great scouts, you know what I mean? I mean, here was Ron Wolf and Al Davis. 1-2, baby, great organization. And you know what Ron Wolf has accomplished. He was there with Al Davis. They were a 1-2 punch, selecting and finding the best players to fit in the great organization. And I was available, and they took their chance on me. And you know what I mean? Because you think, when I came out of the University of Colorado, we were a triple-option team. We finished number 3 in the nation my senior year, only lost 2 games. And we lost to the number 1 team and the number 2 team, which was Nebraska and Oklahoma. And we finished number 3 in the final poll. So the only time in the NCAA history that the number 1, number 2, and number 3 team all came out from the Big 8. To draft me who came out of a triple option offense, but I had 11 touchdowns my senior year,
right,
most of my turns and kickoff returns and maybe 4 touchdowns as a receiver, but with a 27-yard average, you know. But Al Davis saw something that nobody else saw.
Wow! Did you ever get to have that conversation with Al? Like, hey, why'd you pick me?
Yes. He said the threat that put pressure over the top in the secondary.
You really took him out of the game, and you also had the linebackers snapping their necks trying to keep an eye on you.
When you had to stop the Raiders in the 70s. At the top of my game in the 70s and 80s, the first thing you had to stop was number 21. Because we're going to take what we want, and we're going to go over the top.
Now, you clearly had the speed over the cornerbacks, but do you think it was your track background that was the real secret weapon, giving you that stamina?
No, no question about it. You know what I mean? Being a world-class track guy, and that's an individual sport. I talk about it to young people. If you're in school, if you're in the collegiate level, high school level, participate in track, because it gives you that strength and that endurance to prevail and give you that extra mileage and that extra confidence to be successful.
Now, I don't know why I'd ask a man as confident as Cliff Branch this question, but Cliff, was there any cornerbacks that you ever played that going into that week you said, all right, I'm going to have my work cut out for me this week?
Well, again, I had gone against the best in practice. I think there was more fear in the defensive back than I had fear in them, because here's a guy that can run 100 meters in 10 flat, who can run the 100-yard dash in 9-2, 9-1. A defensive back's got to backpedal and try to turn and run with me. He's scared to death. He's scared to death. And here I'm only 5'11", 170 pounds.
See ya.
But can fly like the wind.
And what a scary thing to think. You got Cliff Branch and Fred Biletnikoff lining up against you. What a combo.
Well, I mean, I played with three sets of tandems that was very good. You're talking about me and Biletnikoff and then Dave Casper. And then first, before Raymond Chester got traded to Baltimore for Bubba Smith, it was me, Biletnikoff, and Raymond Chester.
Oh.
And then after that, and when the 80s Super Bowl, we had me, Bobby Chandler, and Raymond Chester. And then the LA era, it was me, Todd Christensen, and Malcolm Barnwell. So there always was a different tight end in the 3 Super Bowls and a flanker. but I always stayed the X-Man.
Are there any current-day receivers or cornerbacks that you say, I'd love to run with him or I'd like to go up against him?
Well, I watched the game, period, and you think of the era that I played and then the era today. Can you imagine me catching 100 balls a year? And the run after the catch, I was talking to Raymond Chesley. He said, can you imagine us catching 100 balls, 80 balls a year? And then have to run after the catch? It would be sickening, the results. I mean, playing an era that they throw the ball pretty much, they use the run for, they use the pass for the run.
Yeah.
It would be frightening to know the results to play in this era today where they throw the ball as much as they do.
Your stats would be going up like a pinball machine adds up. And it's crazy. Watching your game, I think you'd still today be one of the most dominant receivers people have seen.
Well, I tell you what, to play in an era that, again, that throws the ball the way they throw today, I mean, you know what I mean? It'd be a lot of fun.
You played with some stud quarterbacks. Did you have a favorite to play with?
All of them. Monica to catching George Blanda's last touchdown pass to
making
All-Pro 4 straight years with Kenny Stabler to catching the longest touchdown pass in NFL history from Jim Plunkett, 99 yards. I love them all. They all were winners.
Any unique wrinkles to their game that made them similar or different?
The era that I played, there was no offensive coordinator. Can you imagine that? The game was played with the players. You know, the game, Kenny Stabler was given the game plan on a Wednesday. You know, Thursday we executed it on offense day on Thursday. And Sunday we went out and executed it. You know, Kenny called his own plays. He said, guys, you know, let me know what you can do out in the field. It was like playing street football. He said the same thing with Belinda. Let me know what you can do. Art Shell and Gene Upshaw, let me know what kind of defensive front they're playing up front. And then and Upshaw and Shell say, hey, we can do this here. Kenny say, let's go with it. The game was played with the player. There was no offensive coordinator and stuff like that. So we played the game like it should have been played.
Be played.
On the field playing the game. What cracks me up today, disappoint me, those guys should never be coming off the field. The only way they should be coming off the field is when they're injured. The shuffling of players bothers me. Me and Raymond Chester talk about it today. Can you imagine us, they shuffling players in and out to replace me and then replace Raymond and the next play we go in? Because that's the coordinators now. They shuffling players in and out. Players should be on the field, playing the game, looking at the situation, reading the defenses and get a feel of how people are playing you. If you're shuffling players in and off the field, how do you get a feel of the game? How do you get a feel of how the guys are covering you? That's the one part that bothers me.
That may be the gem of all gems ever dropped here on the NFL Alumni Lounge. Now, do you think that some teams are actually, you know, hurting themselves with all the over-analytic studying and all the nitpicking?
I don't know. The way they do things now. When Tom Brady is calling his own plays, Peyton Manning is calling his own plays, Drew Brees is calling his own plays, Andrew Luck is calling those plays, what kind of success are they having? Kenny Stabler getting in the huddle, he said, we're not going to call a play. He said, check with me on the ball. We break the huddle. He said, check with me on the ball. He's going to come up there and read the defense. Same thing the Mannings, the Drew Brees do. They read the defense, then they call their own plays. If a player's coming from the sideline, you know, so they've already predetermined the play.
Yeah.
They can't predetermine the defense, you know, so it's a different game. Sometimes they're successful and sometimes they don't. Players out there playing the game, they got a feel of the game. They should know what they can do out there. Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, you know, the whole schemes, you know what I mean? Players play the game. When coordinators are calling every play, you know, they're predetermining things. But some teams are successful with it, some teams are not. So.
Well, now you got me thinking about those classic Raider teams. What was prep week like before the game under the Madden, Al Davis regime?
Championship games every week, division titles every week, every season. Al wouldn't talk because he's not the head coach. Al let the coaches do their jobs. John would come out and get us started for the week, and we watch film, you know, look at tendencies and stuff like that. Then we break into the division meeting. Tom Flores was my receiver coach, so you know, the preparation, film session is, and they do that today. You know what I mean? Look at a team, how they played the week before, you know, and go from there, and then and build your attack around tendencies.
All right, so with the modern game so specialized, here's a question. What is the job of a head coach in the NFL?
Motivation. Motivation, giving them confidence to believe they can get this done, and, you know, have trust in them, trust in the players, that we're going to put you in the right position, and we're going to give you the best game plan to succeed. And you got to get your rest and be ready to go on Sundays.
Now, this is something I always wonder about you. You were incredible at returning punts and kicks. You set records at the NCAA level. You also love to drive everywhere. So is there something about your vision where you see lanes and it's something you just always took pride in?
Well, I never fair catch a kick. If you talk to the sports director at the University of Colorado, they'll tell you I never fair catch a punt return or a kickoff return. I'm going to catch the ball, and I'm going to make something happen, you know, because the key is securing the catch and making the first guy miss. And if the guy's not close enough to make a first miss, I'm already gone. So never fair catch the kick. Never. I was always going to make something happen, and I did. I had a total of 11 kick returns for touchdowns. 8 of them were successful. 3 was called back. Still today, that's the NCAA record. Still today, since 1971, my record still stands in NCAA history. The most kick returns in collegiate history.
An unforgettable impact, an unforgettable man. Cliff, thank you so much for what you've done for this game of football and for the NFL. And thank you so much for taking the time out to come and bless us on the NFL Alumni Lounge.
CB, I enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing you, CB, okay? Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, we'll never forget that laugh. We'll never forget that man. And actually, true story is, Cliff is the guy that told me I should start the NFL Alumni Lounge. And I said that day, episode 21 goes to the man. We miss you, Cliff. We love you. We thank you guys for tuning in. And you know what? We can't end the show with this music. Let's take it out, CB boys. We'll see you here next week on the NFL Alumni Lounge.
And it's no stopping us now.
We own the moon.
We got the groove.
Yeah, we do.
Cliff Branch and Charlie the Bulls.
We own the moon.
We're on the move, 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 move.
And it's no stopping us now.
It's Branch and Boots. Made a love to you, 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 and you.
And it's no stopping us now.
It's the rate of life. With the fastest man alive, yeah.
We got the boots. And it's no stopping us now.